We'll talk a little bit about the mitzvah of the Zohar Mashiach HaMoed. Okay, so I'll just go with briefly the Machlokes we did yesterday.
Is Grimm the follow up on this?
Okay, hold on a second.
Thanks.
How's that?
Better.
Okay. Okay. All right. So the mitzvah of Zohar is also a Hamoed. So just go briefly what we did yesterday in the truth of mitzvah. There's a difference between the Rambam and the Ramban. Okay, the Rambam is in the Hilchos Melachim, Perkei Alachahei. He says, "Umitzvah sasei v'chem mitzvah la'abed zecher mo'ot." Now, atemcha zecher mo'ot. "Umitzvah sasei lizkor tomid ma'asav haro'im v'arivasa." Interesting. V'arivasa. "Kidei la'orer evasa." In order to arouse, you have to always remember the actions of Amalek in order to arouse the hatred against him. Shenema zochor esa asher osa l'cha Amalek. Mipi ashmu alamdu zochor b'peh lo tishkach b'leiv. She osa l'shkoach evasa v'senasa. No matter forget the hatred. The Rambam Sefer Mitzvah says, she lo tishkach ha-mitzvah v'lo sachlo shen'osa v'sechsa mehanafashos emorech hazman. That the fact that a long time transpires shouldn't weaken the hatred. The time shouldn't have any effect on the hatred, because the normal thing is that as time goes on, people forget. So here the Torah tells you that don't fall sway to that emotion. The emotion that time somehow has an effect. But it's not a logical effect, it's an emotional effect. So you shouldn't fall prey to that emotion. It's time, the element of time should play no role at all. So according to the Rambam anyways, what is the mitzvah? So the mitzvah is, he doesn't learn Parshas Zohar, according to the Rambam, is not Metaraisa. But Zohar means you should constantly remind yourself about it. You should arouse the hatred. How do you arouse the hatred? By verbalizing the deeds of Amalek. And this is a mitzvah that is always upon us. Okay? So Zohar is b'peh, means that you have to verbalize the hatred, and lo tishkach is b'lev. So also lishkach evasa v'senasa. So at first sight, it would sound like a redundancy. Because if you verbalize it, so you're not going to forget it. But apparently it's not a redundancy. It's really yodata l'sof daita shalada. That there are two states in man. A person can arouse the hatred verbally, but yet at times he could passively decide to look away from it. Emotionally. Two different parts of man. There's the active part of man and then the passive part of man. So it means that actively a person must be engaged in arousing the hatred constantly, and on a passive level he shouldn't turn away from the hatred. Okay. I think it's just to give you as an example of the passive form, I think that many times you hear people say, talk about the Nazis, which is without a doubt the representation, I mean the actualization of a mullet, no question about it. So you'll see people talk about the Nazis, they'll say, Hitler Yimach Shemo. You see? So Hitler Yimach Shemo is really, when you say Hitler Yimach Shemo, in my opinion, I think that's referring to Lo Tishkach. Or even if you say Hitler and the Nazis, Yimach Shemo. Because you're taking away from the reality of the people involved. You really should say Hitler and the German nation, Yimach Shemo. But the Nazis is a political identity. So So it's mitigating. It's not politically correct, so you feel bad about it. So you say Hitler the Nazis, then Iran. And also, of course, Machshon. But it's trying to mitigate the sin of hatred and to be politically correct, you see. So you can't forget that it was not an abstraction. It wasn't one person, but the German nation was involved in. The German nation is Yimach Shimon. So you cannot. That's why Sishkach. What Sishkach means is a desire to look aside, to kind of, you know, it's not proper to hate people. So you cave into that emotion. Then you overlook. That's what Sishkach. Two different forms of the mitzvah. One is an active and one is a passive. Yeah. I wasn't clear about that. I meant that the reading Parsha Zohar in Shul, according to the Rambam, is not the mitzvah. Because we paskin that the reading of the Parsha Zohar is mitzvah. So that's why everybody's very careful when, to make sure that they come to Shul yesterday. Because of Pesachim. Many Rishonim, Baal Tesis, that Parsha Zohar is midrash, but the Ram doesn't hold that way. The Ram does not mention anywhere that Parsha Zohar is midrash. The Ram holds it's a mitzvah, a constant mitzvah, to be ma'orah the sinah, and to discuss, to verbalize the deeds of Amalek, not to let them pass from your memory, and to be involved verbally, and also not to mitigate mentally in any way this event and the hatred that one must have towards them all. That's the Rambam. Interesting, the Ramban, so according to the Rambam, it's a mitzvah b'chaleis. Okay, well, whenever the opportunity occurs. So the Ramban is Ramban agrees with the Rambam, it seems, insofar as Parsha Zohar is concerned. The Ramban says, he it's an interesting thing. Zohar is the soul of Hamlet, Ramban and Kisete. End of Kisete, yesterday's Kriya. So the Ramban says, V'lo yadati ma yaschira zu, the path. He says, I don't understand what it means when it says Zohar. What exactly is the form? What's the truth on this? Im lo ma shenikra parshas Hamlet b'tzibur. He says, if you want to say, he brings down the sheet of the Baal HaTesis, that perhaps it means reading Parsha Zohar, and the second Parsha, Bishniya, the second Parsha of the four Parshas, so then you have to say that the second Parsha is Midaraisa. He mentions the possibility. Interesting. Ramban says if that's the case, so then Kriya on the Gila itself is a kiyum deraisa of Zohar Yisrael HaLachar Malek, because the whole Sefer is really a Sefer that gives a vivid description of the whole nature of Malek. So it comes out, according to the Ramban, that Parsha Zohar is midaraisa, the Chachamot Koveya Parsha Zohar, and it's a Kriya L'Shem Zohar. The Ramban holds it not like the Chinuch. And when you read Parsha Zohar and Kisetah, you're not Yetzirah. But he holds it has to be a special Kriya. Special Kriya, Meshim Zechiras, Zechiras Mechias Amalek. So that would be a mitzvah for Samed Arisa. And also he says that Mikra Megillah will have a Kiyam at Arisa. Will have a Kiyam at Arisa, if you say that. So according to Ramban, if you miss Parsha Zohar, you miss the deraisa, but still you have a kiyum deraisa in Kriyas HaMegillah. And the Gemara supports it in Megillah. The Gemara says, Ksov Zos Yikaron Basefer, Ksov and Zos, the Gemara in the Befeimanol, the Gemara says, the Gemara mentions that's why they had a right to write the Megillah. Because Ksov Zos Yikaron Basefer. And the Gemara dashes from that pasuk that it's referring to Mikra Megillah, which means whenever the time occurs, So you have to write the Kitzei Kodesh sefer on the Chisamol. That's what the Ramban is referring to, the Gemara and Megillah. So it comes out that the sefer of the Megillah is really a sefer on Zechiras Mechias HaMalek. Okay. What the Ramban says, Ramban mentions it as a possibility, but then he retracts. He says, I'm not home to Einai. He says, it's a possibility, but what I really think is, they have to describe to the future generations and to teach them what Amalek did and why we must destroy them. The shame the mice in Miriam that Savinu lo dio levanenu lasapu boladaros, same thing Zohar asherosa shemakachu Miriam, va'afo pisha roi gam la'asfiro, shilaladaber begnusi shal tzadikim, even though we really should have hidden it because it's not appropriate to speak about bad things about tzadikim, aval tziva hakosiv lo dio legaloso, kidei shetehei as horas lashin horas sumo basino. It means that this nation should be have the mark of the fact that they're aware of the evil of Lashon Hara and how bad it is. That should be something which is known among the nation. That this nation has a special mitzvah of Lashon Hara that it's constantly aware of. The nation chayt godo v'gorem ros rabos v'nei odom nechshalom bo tamit moshom v'akol b'lashon Hara. Okay, I'll go back to Lashon Hara. Okay. So that's the Ramban. So of course the question is, I mean, what was in the beginning? He seems to say, I don't know what this Zechira is. And in the end, he gives a simplistic answer. Yeah. Now, but what the Ramban is saying, and this is really the difference between the Ramban and the Rambam. See, the Ramban held that the mitzvah of Zohar by Miriam, it counts as one of the mitzvah say. So the question is, I mean, what kind of a mitzvah is it? So the Ramban held that there could be a mitzvah that's dependent upon assessing a level of knowledge among the people. In other words, the condition of the people brings the mitzvah into play. So if the people are lax and they forgot about the idea of Lashon Hara, that's when the mitzvah kicks in. That's when you're chayav to make sure that there's a level of awareness among the nation. So the mitzvah falls on all of Klal Yisrael, but essentially Manhige Klal Yisrael. I mean, that's the job of the Manhige, to make sure, to assess the nation, and to make sure that the level of Yidiyah among the nation is up to par. So the Ramban says that's the same way over here with regard to Zechiras Mechias HaMolek, that you have to assess the nation to see if they still retain these ideas. What Amalek did to us, and why we're mechuyav to destroy them, and if the level sinks below the appropriate level, so then you mechuyav in the mitzvah. See, that's the difference between the senses in the Ramban and between the Rambam. Because the Rambam didn't have a mitzvah of Zohar by Lashon Hara. Ramban incorporates Lashon Hara under the law of Lo Telech Rachel Bar Nacha. But the Ramban held that it's a separate mitzvah. Apparently the Ramban didn't hold from such a tzuras ha-mitzvah, a unique kind of a tzuras ha-mitzvah, that you have to weigh the level of the people. But the Rambam held that the difference in the Rambam and the Ramban will not express itself so much in the maisa ha-mitzvah, but in the tzuras ha-mitzvah. In other words, they both hold the maisa ha-mitzvah is to analyze, to understand Amalek, the ideology of Amalek, what they did, and to understand why we're mechuyav to destroy them. Okay? But according to the Rambam, it's simply intrinsically a constant. It doesn't matter the level of the people. It's a maisa mitzvah, and you're mechuyav at all times and every opportunity to enunciate the mitzvah of mechuyav to Amalek. According to Ramban, it's contingent on the condition of the people. It's machlokes in the nature of the mitzvah. That a mitzvah. Ram apparently held it that it doesn't qualify in terms of tzuras ha-mitzvah. But the difference would be, of course, if even according to the Rambam, even if the level's up to par, doesn't matter. The mitzvah still does not. But at any rate, you see, the mitzvah say according to the Ramban and according to the Rambam, that it's that is not simply kriyas parsha zohar, but you really mechuyev midaraisa to really analyze and to understand the events that took place in with Amalek, and to understand why we're mechuyev to mocha temple to destroy them. Okay. So the question comes: what exactly is the ideology of Amalek? I mean, it's a mitzvah midaraisa to understand it. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, that's wrong. It's not true. Amalek does not reject God. It's an interesting thing. And the Germans believed in God. I mean, I wouldn't say, when I say God, I mean their distorted idea. But in a supreme being, they believe in. I'll leave it at that, because basically they believe in the Christian God, which is a distortion. But they had an idea of a supreme being, and I'll show you that Amalek believed in God. Now, that's not true. Yeah, providence. Yeah, chosen by providence. Yeah, Amalek does not disbelieve in God. Interesting, the Chazal, as a matter of fact, that proves it on the spot. But it's interesting. There's only one pasuk in the Torah that describes Amalek. It boils down to one pasuk. I mean, so yes, Zachar Shasha Amalek. Okay, but Derech that says from the Mitzrayim. But the pasuk is only one. Asher Korcha by Derech Vayizani before Kala Nechshalam Acharecha Vaat Oyef Yagev Loir Elikin. Okay, I mean, it's very small wording to express the horror of these people. Yeah, but that's why you have to make recourse to the Torah Shebaal Peh to understand the pasuk properly. Okay, pasuk is very very brief. But one of the things in the pasuk Rashi mentions, vayizanev b'chol, what is it? Vayizanev b'chol. So the word itself is difficult to translate. Vayizanev b'chol. Zanev comes from Zanov, it means a tail. But what exactly is it a reference to? So Rashi says, interesting. Rashi says, Makas Zanov. Chotech Milos Vizore Klape Mala. That they take the Milos, they take the Jews, and they do Mila on them. That's kind of about text elaborates a little more than Rashi. Shehikos on Makas Zanov. Shehotech Miloseim Shel Yisrael. The Zorkon Klape Mala, and threw the Milos upwards. Va'omer Boze Bocharto Tu Cheltecha. You see? So, you see that if they didn't believe in God, they wouldn't do this. You see that Amalek does believe in God. Not his existence. No. Not his existence. They don't reject God's existence. They believe in God's existence. But it's the Jews that they, there's something about the Jews that they can't tolerate. But God, they have an idea of God. That you see from Das Kanan Balatayis. Yeah. It's an interesting thing, but you see, in Germany, I mean, you had, if you look carefully, you really have a repetition. Unfortunate repetition of the whole system of Amalek. You see, the Ramban mentions Amalek is from Esau. And you see, the Christian Church, everyone knows, the Christian Church really, which is Esau, laid the groundwork. An interesting thing, laid the groundwork for Germany. They really Amalek was an outgrowth of Esau, an outgrowth of Christian theology. An interesting thing, and Ramban says that Amalek is essentially starts from Esau. So the backdrop is Aesop, and it reaches a specific form in Amalek. But the question we have to ask is, what's the difference between Amalek, the most basic question, what's the difference between Amalek, for instance, and other Sonnet? Like the main Sonnet that you have in the Torah, who's the main Sonnet? Is Mitzrayim. I mean, Mitzrayim is the evil enemy of the Jew. But it's an interesting thing. Mitzrayim is an enemy of the Jew historically. You see? An enemy of the Jew historically. But the Torah isolates, and that's Amalek is isolated as an eternal enemy. It's an interesting thing. Just the psukim and the parshias, if you just the way the Torah reads, even on the surface, Mitzrayim was an event. Okay, and then they got out of it. They got out of it because Gulas Hashem. So they got out of it, but then they encounter another kind of an enemy that you don't get out of so quickly. Yod al keshka mufamal Hashem b'amolik midor dor. That's essentially the difference in the Torah between the two enemies. One from one enemy, you can have a gula, and that's it. Gulas Mitzrayim. But the other enemy is an eternal enemy. It's an interesting thing, just the way the Torah depicts the two nations, the nation of Mitzrayim and the nation of Amalek. But what is, we have to really understand, I mean, what? Okay, Kasher Rishon is Mitzrayim Hayom, Lo Sosifu Merosam Odad Olam. That's it, they're gone. But Amalek, Nuchama Lo Hashem Ba'amalek Yidor Dor. Already, Torah already told us at the time when we first became a nation that this is going to be an eternal enemy. It's an interesting thing. That's where the Torah says that. Just shoot this in the car. Okay. So apparently there's an essential difference between the two enemies. Yeah. The first, just to show what the difference is practically between the two. What's the difference? The difference is what is Mitzrayim after? What did Mitzrayim want from us? Mitzrayim wanted from us avdus. Okay? Yeah. Free labor. They want free labor. Okay, okay, so they had an excuse, and they wanted Avdus. Yeah. So, but Amalek doesn't want Avdus. Amalek wants the death of the Jew. Interesting Chazal. Chazal say, V'lomo Amalek doma lekelev, shehu lohut lelake dam. Because a dog, when it sees blood, anyone has a dog? No, when a dog sees blood, a dog starts looking up the blood. Kahu lohut lelake domon shel Yisrael. He enjoys drinking the blood of the Jew. V'zehu Amalek, Amlak. That's the matter. So that's essentially the difference. The difference is Mitzrayim wanted from us Avdus, but Amalek wants death. That's the difference. Amalek. Yeah. So, and that's really one of the elements that's expressed in the pasuk. Vayizane is before Kol Neches Shalom Acharach. See, Kol Neches Shalom. The Nechashalom means, so when you're in battle and people are stragglers and they're dying, so you don't bother, because you get on with the war. But Amalek was interested in destroying the weakest and the most defenseless Jew. That's Vayezanev b'chol kol, Vayezanev b'chol, it has many, the Torah, there's many interpretations. Vayezanev b'chol unkus is the Targum, Vayezanev means to kill. That's why that's the basic the kotel bar called the havamis acher and basel, and all the pshatim are correct. I'm not like it because that's the Torah is given to be understood in, by use certain terms, especially when you use the term Vayarag Baha, Vayazane, is because of the other implication. Okay, because the other has multiple, multiple inferences. But the plain shot is, the plain shot in the pasuk is they kill the weak and the defenseless and the helpless. Why? Because that's a mullet, that's Amalek. And that was the same thing that happened in Germany. Because not only to that degree, but not only did they kill the defense, no doubt that's what the pasuk means as well. Because if you're engaged in a battle, so you don't divert your energies to kill those who are weak and are dying. You see, and that's exactly what Germany did. And even though they were losing the war, they never let up from destroying the helpless and the weakest Jew. It's clearly represented in the pasuk, the events of the pasuk. And it's interesting. I mean, there's a medrash that says that one of the things Amalekim did was that they fooled the Jews and they called them out and they said, "Kama will do business with you." So the Ashakorcha, one of the implications of Ashakorcha Baderach means it was in a hidden manner. In a hidden manner. And that was exactly what the Germans did. Because, you see, I mean, we are not in a position to criticize others that were in this unfortunate situation. But the fact is that we have to realize certain mistakes that we made. And one of the reasons that the Jews, they always ask the question, why did the Jews get into the cattle cars and go along with the Germans? And the answer is, and it's true, that they couldn't imagine, they fooled them, and they said, "We're taking you to labor camp." And they couldn't imagine any reason why they should want to just destroy them. So they thought, okay, so the worst case scenario is that we have to work for them. But that's Losishkach. That's Losishkach. Losishkach, if they would have remembered, Losishkach means to remember the nature of Amalek. Amalek. Amalek is not happy with labor. That's Mitzrayim. But Amalek is only happy with the death of the Jew. Then if we would have remembered that, then we would never have found ourselves in that position. But that was essentially the mistake. Losishkach, it's hard, it's a difficult mitzvah. Some mitzvahs are difficult because they're out of our sense perception, psychological sense perception. Now, the Torah demands, like the Rambam says, that the Zman takes a person away from memory traces. It's a natural phenomenon. But the Torah demands that we not be fooled by that. Just an emotional, it's an emotional kind of comfort. But it's not realistic. And, right. Time, yeah. Right. Time heals all wounds, yeah? That's exactly the issue of the Reich. That philosophy is exactly the issue of the Reich. Time to put the past behind you. You don't put the past behind you when it's a very vital force in the present. Low Cisco. is the halacha is, I mean, the halacha is Timcha's Zecher Amalek. There can't be any remnant. There can't be any remnant. That, to me, that's the problem with reparations. Because reparations means you leave it, that's a Zecher. That's a Zecher. It's a positive element of Amalek. Because it's positive, they're paying back. Reparations, yeah. Big things here, no question about it. No question about it. Yeah, so the, I mean, that's what Rav Chaim said. I mean, Rav Chaim said that that Amalek is the ideology. It's an ideological phenomenon.
I know, when the ideology changes.
Yeah, but you have to realize if you think the ideology changes because you're over the Sishkach, or do you want to believe that, or you really have clear cut evidence that they're chosen to tshuva, and that they say that what we have done is so horrible that we can never be forgiven, and that we could never lift up our face again on this earth, and they're really chosen to tshuva, like a tshuva that no one in the world has ever seen before. When you see something like that, then you have to be chokin the darish to see if it's true or it's just a political move. But as long as you don't see anything like that, you must assume that they're only derishim and nothing at all has changed. And if you want to be nice about it and think that it has changed, I'm afraid you're involved in this stuff.
So you say that certainly, Germany...
I don't have any doubt about it. I don't have the slightest doubt about it. Not the slightest doubt. There's no expression that even nears or even approaches anything of Jewish. Nothing at all. I think that anyone that believes that is just naive and he's ever left his job. Okay. Yeah, it's interesting, but you see that by Haman it was really all Haman and a few of his family, but no doubt other cohorts, but in Germany it was the German nation. It wasn't, that's what Chazal said, that Haman was from Agag. The nation was not Amalek, but in Germany the entire nation was Amalek. And if you read how willingly the German people supported the Nazi regime and helped and aided and abetted and assisted them in every possible way, it's an interesting thing. But there's so many things that are parallel. You know, there's a medrash that says Vayavo Amalek. So what is it? What is Medrash says? Bo be'etza. Amazing Medrash. It's Bo be'etza. That's Vayava Amalek. It came with nature. And it's interesting. Vayava Haman is also Bo be'etza. Vayava Haman. But Vayava Amalek is always the etza that Amalek asked all the other nations to join in the attack on the Jews. So the other nations said they were afraid of the Jews. They said, look, how can we fight them? Because look how they got out of Mitzrayim. Miraculously, it's Shiloh Kederach HaTeva, and we're not going to have a chance against them. So Amalek said to the other nations, I'll make a deal with you. You join us. If we start losing, we're not going to have any dynasty if you leave. But if you see we're being successful, so then you'll join in with us. It's an amazing thing how the conspiracy of silence that took place with the Germans is almost a repetition of the same kind of an idea. Like an underlying statement, it wasn't verbalized, but it was an underlying understanding that if everybody should just be silent to what's going on. And basically that's what the world did. So you see that exactly the same eitzah of Amalek that took place when we left the Mitzrayim centuries and centuries ago was repeated in this century. You say it was repeated within the last century. Exactly the same thing. It was a conspiracy between the entire world and the German people that you be quiet and you don't have to get involved. Just be silent. Just allow us to do our work. And it's basically the same concept, the same idea. It's an amazing thing. Yeah. It is what Rav Chaim said, that any Amalek, any nation whose intent is to destroy the Jew, I mean, there's no question. Arabs today, I mean, that's the thing. They're after the Nakasha. I mean, they just want to kill. They just want to kill Jews. There's no question about it. I mean, you don't have to be too bright to figure that. Okay.
Ready?
Yeah.
The Cuban the Nazis.
100%. 100%.
So
same nation.
Saudi Arabia.
Without a question. Without a question. Without a question. 100%. 100%. You see, even we are chayav. The Svadu Savanam, the Savanam Vosam. We're chayav. So, Kal v'chomer, Ben Benosha, Kal v'chomer, they're chayav. Absolutely. 100%. Because are they benefiting from that, from their progenitors? 100%. But I'm telling you, all these questions are based on a certain naivete. You're being very naive when you, and I'm serious, when you ask these questions. Because anyone that has any idea of psychology, or culture or anything will know immediately that they must, of necessity, be the same Amalekim that they were 50 years ago. There's no question about it. It's just not possible. I mean, it's just a naive, the whole question is not simple. I personally met someone who used to, an Italian fellow, Bobby Kaplan there. Yeah, the men of Bobby Kevin's house, a very nice fellow, used to do business with the Germans. And he told us that, he says, don't think that they're any different. He says, I do business with them, I drink in the bars with them, they would do the same thing to you people again if they could do it right now. If you think otherwise, you're just being naive. You're the most successful. The whole question is nonsense. Okay. At any rate, so the, yeah. You know what? Oh, the Arabs. Yeah. 100%. It's very clear. There's no question. I'm telling you, it's very easy to identify the thing. I'm just telling you that it's hard to understand, and we'll get to why it's hard to understand. There's a reason why. I mean, it's a mitzvah to go over and to understand. So obviously, like the Ramban says, like the Rambam says, so it requires, I mean, Torah requires knowledge. I mean, you can't just, nothing in our Torah is superficial. So you have to learn, you have to understand it. Yes. I'm not going to go into details now. There's no time for that. Okay. At any rate, I want to just understand the basic mitzvah. The basic mitzvah. I'm going to take shiloh on this as well. Just give me a second. So the pasuk says, that's one element. Asher korcha baderach. What isn't it? Asher korcha baderach. What is the? What isn't it? The plain says asher korcha. Korcha means to happen, happening. So it means it was a sudden happening. So what do you mean a sudden happening? What is the meaning of it? Asher korcha baderach. I mean, asher lochem emcha baderach. What's korcha? What is it? Korcha. But you see there in asher korcha baderach. Those words, and you can just see from the sensitivity to the pasuk that those words are emphasized. I mean, Zochor eis asher osa l'cho amoloik baderech b'teis from the Mitzrayim. So it said already where it is. But no, then it repeats, asher korcha baderech. So the in asher korcha baderech has to lie the whole idea of the evil of the Amalekim, you see. What does Asher Korcha Baderach mean? It was a happening, a surprise attack. So what does it mean, it's a surprise attack? It means to say like this, that it's something that one could not have foreseen. In other words, it didn't operate with the normal strategies of battle. According to the normal strategies of war, this would never have occurred. You see? Why? Because the motivation is different. You see, how does one army read what the other army is going to do? It does very simply. They think, what would I do? Okay? So people who are militarily intelligent can always try to figure out what the enemy's going to do by simply making recourse to their own mind. Okay? But by a molech, that's not possible. Asher Korcho means it was a surprise attack because it was, in terms of military understanding, it should never have occurred because it came from a different source, a different motivation. A different ideology was behind it, you see. And that's why it was a surprise. Surprise because you couldn't believe that people have such a motivation, you see. So in Asher Korcho Baderach really lies the hint that you have to look into and understand what the ideology of a Amalek is. The surprise implies a different and inordinate kind of motivation. A motivation that you'd never think of, and therefore you'd never expect them to attack the way they did, you see. That's the idea in Asher Korcho Baderach. But that's, the Torah emphasizes that. Asher Korcho Baderach is everything in terms of just reading the pasuk. The first thing is, Baderach, there's not Asher Korcho Baderach. Then, Vayizaneh is Bechor Kol Anecha Shalom Acharecha. That's Amlak. But Asher Korcho Baderach tells you, there's something of a surprise here. You have to investigate the motivation. You wouldn't expect them to act the way they did. It's unexpected. So the Torah demands that we look into understand, in order to understand what their ideology is. Then you can only understand what a person is going to do, and shouldn't be surprised if you understand their mental framework. You see? But this is a strange mental framework, one that requires demands investigation. Okay. So now we come to the basic question. I mentioned yesterday, but I'll get back to that later. But So what is the difference? The difference between Amalek and Mitzrayim is Mitzrayim wants Shibud, wants Avdus, and Amalek wants destruction for us. Okay. So the difference really starts with the same pasuk. It's interesting. What was the pasuk? What is the pasuk that Moshe Rabbeinu received after he accepted his mission? So then then HaKadosh Baruch Hu told him like an overview of how he should speak to Paro. You see, like the general idea, because it's a strange thing. He's going to Paro. What is the basic claim? It's interesting. After the whole Moshe Rabbeinu's refusing and then finally accepting and then all the ideas and the nisim, but then he went back Vayelach Moshe Vayosher Yagel Yesach Chosno, and then it says Vayelach Moshe Rabbeinu Lech Shuv Mitzrayim Kemeskel Moshe Vachim Es Nafshecha. So then HaKadosh Baruch Hu told them not to be afraid of Paro, which, as we mentioned, means he had no special protection standing before Paro. And Va'amarta Paro. What should you say? First, he prepared himself that he shouldn't be overcome by fear because his life was in danger when he stood before Paro. And then Va'amarta Paro. Now, what should you say to Paro? And it's a very short message. Ko Omar Hashem. Bini Bechori Yisrael. Va'omar Elecha. Shalach es bini diavdeni, vatemoin v'shalcho, hine anochli horeg es bincha b'chorecha. Okay? They told him eventually that was going to happen. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave him derech mashal, a simple mashal that he can understand it, understand. What was the argument? Because you have to understand, this is a strange thing. After all, God didn't interfere with other nations that the Egyptians took as slaves. You could be sure they had other people. I don't know how many, but they had slaves. They had many slaves. But God apparently didn't interfere with it. So Moshe Rabbeinu is coming to Paro. Suddenly there's a problem. I mean, Paro's been running slavery as part of the economy for years and years. All of a sudden there's a problem. So what's wrong with it? So HaKadosh Baruch Hu told Moshe, tell him one thing. You made a mistake over here. Because this is Bnei Bechori Yisrael. These people are not of others. You see? Shalach is a means the Aveni, but to moin the Shalach. And if you don't comply, then I will give you Nida to Negan. Nida, Hinei, Anochi, Horeg, is Bincha B'chorach. Okay. So the essential message was, B'nida Chori Yisrael. It's a hard message to accept. I mean, that these people are different. It's not, you didn't engage ordinary slaves, but these are different. These people can't be slaves. Okay? B'nida Bukhari. Hard thing to accept. So Paro, you see, but in B'nida Bukhari Yisrael lies not just a message to Paro, but it really is it's our identity, you see. It also, in giving that message to Paro, it wasn't just a statement, it was a definition. It was a definition of Klal Yisrael. That Klal Yisrael is B'chor Lashem. Racist to us, B'nei B'chor Yisrael. So that was a hard message for Paro to accept. I mean, that was all things. That he accepts such a thing that these people are different, an exception to the rule. God doesn't interfere with other planets. Different. He judges in a different system. But this can't be. B'nei B'chor Yisrael. So Paro had a hard time accepting it, and then through the Nisim, he finally did accept it. He didn't accept it. Okay. But in the end, we were negolim. See, Amalek also, the problem with Amalek has to be in the same realm. In the realm of B'nei B'chor Yisrael. For Amalek was a different kind of a problem. Enslaving would not be a solution. Only total annihilation. You see? Now we have to understand why is that there? And the answer is like this. The answer is because Amalek is a different kind of an enemy. See, Amalek is a different kind of an enemy. A much, much more sophisticated enemy, and that's why a much more dangerous enemy. You see, Amalek, racist Goyim Amalek. As I mentioned before, racist Goyim Amalek means the highest level, the highest culture, science, technology, and Germany expressed that to the highest degree. That's why people were amazed. What do you mean? Such a cultured nation? Such evil, horrible practices? Yeah, but the Torah tells no contradiction. That's the problem. Racist Goyim Amalek, Vachris Odeyore. So, yeah, culture-wise, they're the highest nation. But because of that, the expression of their animosity takes on a different form. You see, it takes on a different form because they're sophisticated. You see, the sophistication leads them to a different, places them in a different range. You see. In other words, if a person is more of a brute, I mean, he's less sophisticated, so he's satisfied on a lower plane. You see. But when a person is ideological in nature, so then they're smarter, they're more intelligent. In other words, Paro thought that if the Jews are enslaved, he won the battle against the Jews. Vaharaya, they're working for me. So you see that there's nothing special about that. Amalek realizes that that's not a victory. They're enslaved, but they still can be B'nei B'chor. Okay? Because that's not when you win the battle. You don't win the battle as long as they have an ideology. As long as they can exist with an ideology, I don't care if you have them enslaved, but they still can maintain B'nei B'chor Yisrael. It's just an extraneous thing. Slavery is an economic situation. Economically, you defeated them. But you really need to defeat them because they really retain the idea that they're the Ben Bechor, they're Bechor Lakadosh Baruch Hu. And the intelligence and the sophistication of Amalek makes them wise to that. They know, you see, Paro was kind, was was not as sophisticated. He felt as long as he defeats them, they can only, okay, they're defeated. A Moloch recognizes, no, that's not enough. Now isn't that enough? That's not where the battle is. The battle is on an ideological plane. Can the Jew walk around and feel, as long as the Jew can think to himself that he is B'chor Lashem, that he's the Am HaNivchar, and there's something special, and he has a special relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, no matter what the circumstance, the Jews want. You see? That's Amalek. That's why Amalek has to totally annihilate the Jews. Mm-hmm. Interesting Medrash. The Medrash says that what is right, it's not just the Medrash, Rashi quotes. Rashi says, one Yitzchakim Asher Korcho Badarach. So Rashi says, well, first of all, Lashon Mikra. Dova Acher Lashon Keri V'tuma. So in the Tamon B'mishkev Zoha. You see? So the Medrash elaborates more that they would use them for Mishkev Zoha, for homosexuality. What does that mean? That means total degradation. To degrade them and show them that they're just sexual objects. That was a Moloch. That's such a kochel baderach. And I mentioned yesterday, I spoke to someone who was involved in liberating the camps. And I won't go into the description. Actually, we really should. I mean, it's another time. I mean, what amazed him was, and things that he spoke about, he said, I'm not even speaking fully, I'm really fulfilling tremendously. He says, you cannot imagine what extent they went to degrade the Jew. That was for no reason, but just pure, they went at it, the energy they spent in total degradation. And he just mentioned one of the things, how they had a room where they had the skins of the Jews and organs that they made lamps and various objects all over, and when they would relax, so the officials would go into that room and just to look around and to enjoy the total how these people were tortured, degraded in every shape and form. It's unbelievable. It's unreal. I can't even begin to speak about it. The things you mentioned, I mean, were hard for the audience to even listen to. So I'm not telling you even a fraction, a significant fraction of it. So that's really that's the Chazal Asher Korcho Baderach, with the Chazal mentioned. Just you have to understand when Chazal speak, they speak very briefly. But what they do is they just touch on, I mean, but the idea is something, and that's the mitzvah of Zohar, is to really understand deeply and not to fool yourself as to what these people are after. What they're really after. It's a different kind of an enemy. It's an ideological enemy. An enemy that cannot tolerate not only can't they tolerate the Jew existing, you say, I want to say there's two parts of it. Because Amalek is racist going, but they're also the most primitive people as well. You see. But they're racist going because they're smart. They know that the battle is, that ultimately the battle is on the ideological plane. Paro is foolish because he thought the battle was on the economic plane. No, Amalek is smart. He knows the battle is on the ideological plane. But it's not just that he wants to destroy the Jews in order that there shouldn't be any B'nai B'chori Yisrael, but what he has to act out is kind of degrading. He is forced, it is a sick mind that has to act out the degrading in order to prove to himself, you see, that he is superior. And the way that the only way he can convince his distorted mind is by acting it out physically against the Jew in an act of degradation. That's Asher Korcho Mishkev Zoha. You see? And that's exactly what the Germans did. And you see, the Los Hishkach is a very difficult mitzvah. Los Hishkach is very difficult. This fellow that he worked with Dan Marino, and he spent his life, really. I mean, after the first 2 years after the war, he said, no one wanted to listen to him. And he was very frustrated. He said, even his buddies, that they went into the camps and they saw these things, they could not believe it. He says, if there's a regular American guy from Vermont, and they're a plain guy, and he says, we couldn't believe it. He says, but he could not even get his friends to sit down, and he wanted to discuss it. He said he was so sick, he had nightmares, he couldn't sleep for years. And he says, and I wasn't even a victim. I mean, he came in and he liberated the camp. But he says, I couldn't get anybody to even listen to me. Mm-hmm. He says, until a few years ago, when people were willing to listen, but he says, now his whole life is to try to make sure that the records are accurate as to what exactly, he works with Washington to make sure that the records are accurate as to the accounts of what took place. But, you see, no one really wants to see those records, even today. You know, nobody wants to see those because they don't want to know from the atrocities. That's Los Hishkach. That's Los Hishkach. Yeah. It's a very, if you don't have the knowledge, if you turn away from the knowledge, you pay a very, very expensive price. Very expensive price. You can't afford to do that. And that's why people say that in Eretz Yisrael, right after the Holocaust, the Jews were more active. Because it had just happened and they were very motivated because Amalek was just there. It wasn't, like the Rambam says, the answer is with the passing of time. 50 years passes and you see the talk changes. The talk changes. That's what Torah tells us. It's a very, very harmful attitude. One that will cost us dearly. Zohar Yisrael Yisrael Amalek is not a mitzvah in the Torah that we should be ashamed of or look away from. It's a mitzvah that should cause us to be ashamed of the fact that we didn't heed the advice of the Torah and study what the Torah says carefully and accurately and deeply in order to make sure that we're prepared in the event that the situation arises again. And had we done that, no doubt we would not have suffered as we did. Well, Sishkach, it's a difficult myth. But it's not for nothing that it's I want you to know, Zohar is not just a mitzvah. Zohar is not just a mitzvah. Because not just one of Tayag. It has a special significance. It really involves Yisori Adon. And you see that's what the Pasuk says. That Yod al Kase Kor, Milchama L'Hashem Ba'Amalek Midor Dor. Doesn't say that by any means. It's a mitzvah which has an extreme significance. I mean, that's really the Megillah, the Ramas of the Ramban, the Smach for the Megillah of the Raisa. That means we have to have in mind when we read the Megillah, to read it, to understand it, to study it deeply, carefully, because this is part of the mitzvah, for Sishkach. It's a mitzvah, and that's why I believe the Ramban holds that this mitzvah, because the question really is, in terms of source on mitzvah, it would seem the Rambam is right. That's a difficult surah. What kind of source on mitzvah is that? Among the nation, when you see the level of the nation is low, so then the mitzvah comes in. I mean, it's a strange kind of a thing. But I think what the Rambam was saying is something deeper. That there are certain mitzvahs which, because of the nature of the mitzvah, it is not just a kind of mechanical performance, like lulav, you see. It's a mitzvah that really is tied to the whole underlying philosophy and ideology of Yahadah. And that's why it has a different tzura. Why? Because the tzura really shows you that this is not a mitzvah that you could perform like mitzvah, if you'll hold mitzvah saying Shrichas Kavana. So, okay, if you hold mitzvah saying Shrichas Kavana, so if I blow shofar and then I'm near to the mitzvah. This is not that kind of mitzvah. This mitzvah, that's why the mitzvah according to the Ramban, it's like Lashon Hara. Lashon Hara can't be framed in a mechanical source of mitzvah. It can't. Because it's the yisod in the dust. And that's why the Ramban equates the two, But for Ramban says there is no other way that this, there's no other tzura that this mitzvah can have. It demands this kind of a tzura. But if it has a different kind of a tzura, then the significance of the mitzvah will be lost. That's really what the Ramban is saying. That's why he equates it there. Yeah. What I wanted to mention was like this. That you see that it's an interesting thing. We mentioned this, we tied in the Haftorah to the Haftorah to the Pasha of Simchas Zecher HaMelech. Now we said, what was Shaul's fate? What was Shaul's fate? The Shaul's fate, so everything ties in it. The Shaul's fate is really, the fate was that Vayachmo, he had Rachmanis, the Pasuk mentions two things, Agag, and the Tzon and the Bucker. Okay, Tzon and Bucker, I can understand. That was something that, because, I mean, people like money, Tzon and Bucker, cattle, and those that cattle was money. So it's hard to keep people away from it. Okay. But what about Agag? Why did he have Rachmanis on Agag? I mean, after all, it was a Rosh Hashem Rishayim. You see that Shmuel said, Kasha Shikwa Minoshim Charbecho. He was the performed horrible atrocities. So why did Shaul have Rachmanis on him? It's a strange kind of a thing. What was the reason for that? I mentioned the reason was, no doubt Agag was an interesting personality, and he knew how to comport himself, how to speak well. He was a great politician. He wasn't a Melech for no reason at all. A politician has certain skills, and he had them all, obviously. And what happened was, and also the people looked at him, he's royalty. He's somebody special, you see. That emotion, to look at a human being and think that he's something special, somebody special, that is really the aim of Amalek. Shaul fell into the very trap, that's why it was such a horrible thing. That's why Shmuel, as much as he begged Shmuel, Shmuel couldn't help him. Because what he did was, could not be undone. You see. And he gave him, because he was a Melech, so he gave him what the Torah helps us, because the Torah isolates certain phenomena. And it gives a stamp to them. So you could see when it occurs in your life, you can recognize it. The stamp over here is the feeling of celebrity status. The celebrity status, that's a concept in our society, it's a concept in the past as well. But you can see it in today's society. You feel like a person will meet a star, a famous person, so they're awed. Okay? Celebrity status. That. Yeah. John Wayne went down as a great fighter, a great warrior. But people don't know the fact that he dodged the Second World War. But anyway, yeah. But yeah, that's celebrity status. That's a concept that exists. A very, very powerful concept in our society. So that concept, that's Amalek. What does Amalek want? Amalek wants celebrity status. What does the Pasuk say? By Haman, by Yar Haman, he aim Mordechai, Koreo Mishtachavelo, by Yves Be'enov, by Amalek Haman Chema. And what did he tell his friends? The whole Zain is Shovelay. Nothing has any value at all. Be'ishani Yoas Mordechai HaYehudi B'Shar HaMelech. Why? What did Mordechai refuse to do? He refused to give Haman one thing. Liberty first. That was what he demanded. And that was really the fate of Shaw. Because Shaw gave a god celebrity status. And that's our mullah. Because we don't have any concept of celebrity status. Halacha is, we have a concept of a Rebbe. We do, most Rabbeinu, do we celebrate anything about his birthday or anything? The Adon Anavim, the one that was, that gave us Kol HaTorah Kulo, the Pierre Dur, the medicine. The only thing we do, we learn the Torah. And a Rebbe, as much as it's a lach of a derech eretz for a Rav, but if a Rav does something wrong, so you machoyis to tell him politely, and I let him embarrass him, and of course, cover the Torah. But, lo kach we might attain a Rabbeinu, so if a Rav does something wrong, you machoyis to go over and inform him. There's no such thing. Celebrity status is the egoism of man. And Yahadus, is Yahadus, the expression of Yahadus is Varnochi Afavesa. That's the ideal state for man. Only HaKadosh Baruch Hu is great. Kel HaGadol L'Giv HaNora means only. He's the only. So Yahadus is the exact antithesis of the philosophy of Amalek. And what can't Amalek tolerate? A mullah can't tolerate not that philosophy in abstract so much, you see, but a mullah can't tolerate B'nei B'chori Yisrael, that this is the nation that is close to God because of the fact that they recognize that the ultimate perfection of man is Ranochi Ofaveva. And they actually are the living example of this, of the Torah ideology. That's what a mullah cannot tolerate. It's a double thing. It's one thing is the philosophy is the antithesis of all their strivings and everything that they desire. And the second thing is that there should be a nation that exists that reflects that philosophy, not only reflects that philosophy, but because of that, they have special importance in the eyes of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's a mullah. And that's why the mitzvah is limchos for zechama. That's a different thing. That mitzina yad asun sin lumos olam. That's a general sinner. Yeah, that's true. They all hate us because no one wants to accept the fact that we're the amanifcha. But that's understandable. See, that's just jealousy. Jealousy is something which is a different. It's a different kind of thing. A mullah is not jealousy. Mullah is a different, very deeply rooted, diseased, distorted kind of mind. But to forget that exists is a horrible, horrible avera of lo tishkach, and in practicality, it leads to catastrophic results, yes. Let me put it this way. I would say this way. Hanukkah is understandable in normal human psychology. Can explain Hanukkah. But in Amalek, it's abnormal psychology. Amalek is universal abnormal psychology. You see, it's not, it cannot be explained in normal terms. An ordinary person doesn't think in those terms. But we are obligated to recognize that there are people that think in those terms, and they do exist. And we must recognize it and not forget it and constantly be aware of it so that eventually when we're in a position we will be able to totally destroy any individuals that reflect that idea, embody that idea, and the Chiyas HaMolek is one of the mitzvahs that goes together with Binyan Migdash. Yeah, their perception of God is based on, their whole philosophy is the aggrandizement of man. I mean, the super race is really the statement of Amalek. But their idea of God is, because they realize that man is unable to control everything, and they wish to control everything, so therefore, they invoke a God, you see, that will be able to bridge that gap, you see, and make them really supernaturally supreme. You see? That's really, that's their idea of God. That's like Hitler's idea of God. The Jews' existence stands in the way of that. The Jews' existence stands in the way of that.
That's part of that abnormal psychology.
Yeah, because they are maintaining that they are the superior people. And the reality of the Jew is simply, it can't coexist in their minds. The danger that the Jews' reality is true causes them to act out their destructive activities in order to prove to themselves that it's not true. That's what I tried to mention before. Okay, it's clear?
Yeah.
Okay. Now there's one more interesting thing up here. You see, the interesting thing is like this. So what do we, how do we do battle with Amalek? Okay, Simcha is Amalek. There's no question about it. If we have the opportunity, we have to destroy them. You can't have Rachmanis, and you must destroy them. Wipe them out completely. But it's interesting in the battle itself. In the battle itself of Amalek, we find something very, very strange. Because in the end of B'Shalach, so the Pasuk says, Vayavo Amalek, Vayilochem in Yisrael Berfidim, right? So, what happened? So, Vayama Moshe Shiv Chalon Moshe Seilach Amalek, Mocha, Anoch Yisrael Roshe Giva Mate Lekimbi Avi, Yassi Yashir Gashim Olam Moshe Lochem Amalek, Moshe Aaron Vachur Olu Roshe Giva. And the Pasuk says, Vahoya Kasher Yorim Moshe Yodo Vigova Yisrael, Vachashe Yemiach Yodo Vigova Amalek. So the Mishnah in Rosh Hashanah says, what is the meaning of this? It says, the chiyodav shel Moshe osim mochama. In other words, that shows you that you cannot accept the Torah literally. I mean, as nice as the sounds, it's impossible. It can't be such a thing. We don't believe in such ideas. I mean, HaKadosh Baruch Hu could do anything, but HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't do things like that. So to say that Moshe Rabbeinu picked up his hands, if Jews are going to win, they lose his hands, that they're losing, that's nonsensical. It cannot be. So what does the Pasuk mean? We don't accept nonsensical interpretation. So the Mishnah says no, it means, and everybody learns it, that it means Omdin Betzilo. So it means that when Moshe Rabbeinu raised his hands, Klape Shamayim, it means that he was only the Tzilo, and the Ramban says. The Ramban says, V'olo Shom Kadeshi Yiras Yisroel Hanel Chomen, V'yosim Eino Aleim Letova, V'gam Hin Yiros, V'poreis Kapo V'Shamayim, V'mar Be'Tzilo, V'yivtuchu Vol V'yosif Roma Tzivuo, V'pirti Rabbi Eliezer Oz, Kol Yisroel Yatsu Chutz Lo'Aleim, V'lo Es Moshe Korei Al Biko, V'hin Kol Mabikim, No fell upon a vato, the hain no from up an amato. Pires es yodav lashamayim, the hain parson es yodav lashamayim. Hishem se shaliach tzibo mispalel, kach kola om onin achrav. The hitu akarish bocha sam molik vesama biyad yeshua. That's the Ramban quote, picture of a lover. So it was really a mighty tzibo. So this was a strange kind of a war. Because, you see, before in B'Shalach, what happened when Moshe Rabbeinu was misfollowed? So HaKadosh Baruch Hu told him, no. He says, he was only B'Tzila, and it says, the Pasuk says, So Moshe Rabbeinu was only the Tzilo, so and the Mitzvah were coming. So Rashi says, "Lamadnu say Moshe only made a misfalo. Omer lo Hakadosh Baruch Hu lo eis ata laharach the Tzilo. It's not a time for the Tzilo. So you're showing from the Batzor. Now you have to move. You have to move the army. It's not a time for Tzilo. So we hold. I mean, as valuable as Tzilo is, and Tzilo is the highest metaphysical expression of man. But the fact is." That there's a time for tefillah, and that's not the time for tefillah. So, by Amalek, you see the opposite. You see a war that is won through tefillah. Exactly against what we hold. Normally, if you have to go to, a person has to go to war, and he's going to sit at home being his foul, he's over in the Israelites. Doesn't say when they went out to battle, they went out to battle. That's just nonsense to it. But over here against the Mullahs, you must have Tfilah. And no doubt, the arm, you see, there was an arm, a part of the arm that didn't go to Muhammad. They went foul, like the picket of a lotus. So why is that so? Why is that so? Yes. You're right. But how is it ideological, and how does the Tfilah work? You see, it says that Kolzman was lost in the Mishnah Rosh Hashanah. Kolzman because what it means is that you should don't underestimate the power. You see, the Amalek is an ideological battle, and that's why Amalek espouses a philosophy and a propaganda. The philosophy and the propaganda is an integral part of their whole system. That's why you see how much in Germany, how much effort they spent on propaganda. Goebbels, the minister of propaganda. The reason is because it is an ideological war, you see. But the Jew has to remember that it's not that simple to be unafraid of the propaganda and of the espousing of the philosophy. It's very simplistic when you're not there, but when you're in the presence of it, it has a powerful force on the person. So Jews in Germany, when they heard of Hitler and the Germans, when they heard them espouse their philosophy, it struck a fear in their hearts. So the only antidote, the only way for us to escape that is to be Meshabeli Beni Lavina Shvashamayim. It means that when a person recognizes the true system, the truth, and he recognizes Hashgachas Hashem, and he has the correct ideas in terms of Yediyas Hashem and Amunah Hashem, so then he's able to ward off the fear of the false notions that Amalek presents to the world. But that's why by Amalek, the battle, you see, the Torah has an interesting idea of battle in general. That battle, according to Yahadus, is really 90% psychological. Because you see and that was really, by the way, that's why that Chazal said it was Amalek, because Amalek recognized that. Because one of the children answered, Korcha Baderach, means he cooled you down. Because the Jews, when they left Mitzrayim, so nobody would go near them. Because they were afraid. It was Nimas Levavam. So they just were going to walk through Canaan and just take over. You see, just like in time of Yeshua. Like Rachel Azana said. But the Amalek recognized that they couldn't tolerate that. So therefore Amalek built up a counter propaganda, a counter philosophy, and that's what frightened the Jews. So the only way they could keep their mind on reality, and if a person's mind is on reality, then all these things are totally, the person's senses, they're all nonsensical. But in order for a person to know they're nonsensical, he has to be in the realm of knowledge. If he's in the realm of emotions, it's just his emotion against the other person's emotion, and the other person's emotion can overpower his emotion. But the only way the person can be totally unaffected by the powerful philosophy and propaganda of Amalek is to be in line with true knowledge. The person who's in line with true knowledge, he knows that all this is an absolute nonsense. There's no basis in reality. So that's why the Mohammed against Amalek involves, of necessity, Okay.
I'd like to clarify some points. I got a lot of questions yesterday last year about the concept of Amalek and Amalek in the Torah occupies a central position. Oh, the concept of it. I mean, you see different sukkim themselves that the Pasuk says, "Ki mochel emches zecha amolek, itachas hashemayim." And the Chazal says that Yeshua wanted to destroy Amalek at that moment. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu said no. That Mashiach Amalek is redeemed through my hands, La'asad Lava. Yemocho Emche Zecha Amalek. So you see immediately from the Tzukim that there's something different here. There's something different here. But I want to explain something that I don't want to be any misunderstanding. And that is that we're talking about Zera Amalek and last time. And of course, you know, I mean, you have to understand exactly what that means. The concept of Zera Amalek. There's a Chazal, there's a Medrash that says that HaKadosh Baruch Hu Nizva B'Kiso, that is Mekabel Gerim, Nizva B'Kiso as Mekabel Gerim from all the Umos Olam, but from Amalek never. From Zera Amalek never. And that's why after the Second World War, so the Gedolei Yisrael got together and they made up not to accept any Gerim from the Germans, the other nations, the other people that were involved with them. Not to move it, yes. So I'd like to explain now, and I mentioned last time, I said that Chaim mentioned that Amalek is really not a biological phenomenon. That's interesting. So I want to clear up the area. Now the Rambam mentions in Perek Vav of Hilchos Melachim that in Osu Melchomo and Adam Ba'olam. I said, call and low, shalom. So you don't make war with any human being in the world unless you first offer him the prospect of peace. Echad Mochamas Rasus, the Echad Mochamas Nisra. The Namaki Sikrov, El Yuri Lochem Allah, the Kolasa Elo Lachel. In the Shlumu, the Tibu Seven Mitzvot, the Savo Bedein El Chalayim, in Hogim and in Shoma, Varehin Lamas. Nema Yiluch Alamas Avaduch. Okay, so the Rambam explains, now this is anybody in the world. Okay, the Rambam is more explicit later in Lachadavi. Avo Shiva, this is the Me'am, where it talks about, Avo Shiva Aminim V'amolek Shelo Hishlimu. You see, in Menichan and Neshama. But the Rambam is clear that this includes Amalek as well. The time of Amalek, if we approach Amalek and Amalek is in Kabbalah, mitzvah, 7 years to Allah, and they agree to live according to the most basic, rudimentary, fundamental ideas of justice and recognition of God, so then we don't touch it. Okay. I mean, that's Allah. So, here's what we think. So, what does it mean by Zera Amalek? So, apparently, if Amalek is closer to the Tumor, so when the Kabbal gets you, he's an Amalek. But it means to say, and that's why we've been falsely accused that we basically hold from genocide. Chas v'shalom. We ain't Osim Mochomo, but Adam Tabola, no matter who he is, even if he's an Amaleki. If he's in the Kabbalah, he's called to the Tuba, he's accepted. But there is a concept, nevertheless, of Zera Amalek. So, what does it mean, Zera Amalek? The answer is Zera Amalek means not the biological offspring, as you mentioned, the Rebbe Shalhoma. There's no such thing as a Chazal said. Even the worst of sin, we never brand a person. We never brand a person because of his, because he came from a Russia. He could be the biggest tzaddik, and there's no Nothing stands in the way of him, being the greatest Tzaddik. But there is a concept of Zera Amalek. So how can it be a concept of Zera Amalek? The answer, Zera Amalek means those people that were raised in an atmosphere, an environment of evil, and they haven't renounced it. That's Zera Amalek. So it may be for some people a subtle distinction. I don't think it's subtle. I think it's very clear, but it's a very significant one. Because we have to understand exactly what we mean by Amalek, and not to, when we say that the hatred is unmitigated, it is unmitigated, but it's against a group that embraces a certain ideology and their offspring. Unless we see the offspring are following in the same derech, and they haven't come up and been chosen, because we have the incident in the Navi of Nineveh, the derech of being chosen to Tshuva, and Malbus Sak, and they recognize the horrible evil, and they renounce it, and they realize that that they don't want to have any part of it, and they're chosen to Tshuva, and they uproot the way they were raised, the ideology they were raised in, and they do a real Tshuva, that's acceptable. But if we don't see that, and we see on the contrary, they try to hide and disguise the evil, then there's Zera Amalek. Same the Kabbalah Mandir. I just want to make sure what the idea is. There is a concept of Zera Amalek, but it's not like most people. Okay. Yes. The question is a good one, but I'll get to it a little later, but you have to understand that there are two systems here. The essential purpose of the whole Torah is for the entire world, for every human being. It doesn't necessarily mean that every human being can be a part of the Ummah Yisrael. That's a different kind of a thing. And that is because, I want to get into the philosophy of Amalek a little more. I mean, you'll understand what I mean. But the concept of the Ummah Yisrael has a very distinct idea. It's not like people think that we're God's favorites. There's nothing to do with that. And I want to show you what it's really based on a concept, because Amalek always is the antithesis of what Klal Yisrael stands for. The concept of Amalek is the antithesis. And the idea of Amalek, why it is so significant, is not like there's a Chazal, there's a Medrash that says that HaKadosh Baruch Hu says that if you don't remember Amalek, if you don't remember to discuss Amalek and to have the hatred against Amalek, that I'll bring you right back to where to Mitzrayim, to where you came from. What does it mean? It means to say that your whole essence is existence, non-existence. Because our essence is that we're going to go. So apparently, so that's why I mentioned that this mitzvah is really a theme, like Ramban says, it's really a theme of the Ahadith, just like Lashon Hara. It's not a simple mitzvah. Not simple to understand, and not simple to do. And it's a theme in that exists, that must always exist in Klal Yisrael. And that's what I want to elaborate on. I think I wasn't clear perhaps last time. But the concept, what is really the philosophy of Amalek. And I want to show that Amalek is not simply